Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Yes, for sure, a nice number on economic growth. But that is not, you will be shocked to learn, the whole story. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday, today the 29th of October. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. All right, come on. Repeat after me. You have been hearing or reading it all day, I know. The U.S. economy, come on, grew at an annual rate of, come on, fill in the blank, you know it, right? 33% in the third quarter. Again, that is annualized, or just from July to September, compared to a quarter earlier, growth rate was 7.4%, which sounds great. It does, and kind of is, but it doesn't get us back to where we were or to where we might have been without this pandemic. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer gets us going with the output gap.
We've all been there. Sometimes we just don't live up to our potential. Former Fed economist Claudia Sahm says it's kind of like what happened in her house this morning when her fifth grade son had to retake a virtual math test. The teacher knew what his potential was, but...
And because he wanted to get done with school and play on his iPad, he didn't put in the time and do his best work.
Some says it's the same with the economy. The output gap is the difference between what the economy is actually doing versus what it could do before COVID. In recent years, GDP has been growing at 2% or more.
But it just means that we know what we could be. And if we're not there yet, well, then we've got to do better.
Even with today's strong GDP number, we've only made up about 60% of the economic ground we lost in the first half of this year, according to Nationwide senior economist Ben Ayers. He says that's partly because consumers are still avoiding risk.
You know, consumers are still down about a third from what they normally spend overall. And certainly most of that's focused on the service sector with people not eating out as much. You know, music concerts, anything that would involve large groups.
The solution here is pretty simple. Less virus and more economic relief from Congress. Another relief bill. Greg Dacko, chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, says a lot of consumers relied on extra federal unemployment payments that ended over the summer.
As these transfers slowly faded out, consumer spending activity has also cooled.
Dacko says it'll be at least another year before we get back to a normal rate of economic growth. Without another relief package, he says it'll take even longer. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Good as that GDP report was, even if, yes, starting from a lower base, some parts of this economy are in a deeper hole than others. Restaurants is a real good example. A lot of them are still dealing with rising costs and weak demand and limits on their capacity. From Austin, Texas, Marketplace's Andy Euler checked in on the state of that industry in Texas.
The dining room at Southern food restaurant Olame in Austin has been closed since March. Chef and owner Michael Fotege decided in July to focus the menu on buttermilk biscuits and biscuit sandwiches and sell them curbside.
So it's about 180 degrees from what we've done in the past as a fine dining restaurant.
Which means a lower overhead for sure, but biscuits don't bring as much, forgive me, dough? Last October's numbers?
Oh, we would be doing north of $300,000 a month in sales. And this month we'll be lucky to get to $60,000.
11 people work at Olame right now, down from 30 in March. Emily Williams Knight with the Texas Restaurant Association says 200,000 Texans who were working in the industry before the pandemic still aren't back, partly because so many restaurants have closed for good.
We're projecting that through September, we lost about 15% of our 50,000 restaurants.
And she says it's likely to get worse.
We assumed, falsely now, that we would receive an additional relief package from Congress.
Which isn't coming anytime soon. Trey Malone teaches economics at Michigan State University. He says a comprehensive federal relief plan for restaurants is tough because the industry is so diverse and region-specific.
The restaurant relief policy in Detroit, Michigan, just is not going to look the same as the restaurant relief package that's needed in Austin, Texas.
At Olame, Michael Fotoche says when his dining room opens back up again, he's convinced the biscuit business can remain open too.
That is the silver lining, that here we are with another very valuable concept that we believe has legs and in the long run should be successful.
He hopes then he'll be able to start paying down the debt he's acquired during the pandemic. In Austin, Texas, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Buying the dip is what happened on Wall Street today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Pennsylvania is one of the key states in this year's presidential election, as I am sure you've heard. It's also one of the key states for the fracking industry up and down the ballot, as I'm sure you have also heard. Fracking for gas has long been thought of as a bridge to get us to wherever the cost of wind and solar has made those renewables as cheap as gas. And as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, a couple of new studies suggest that time may already be here.
It just gets cheaper and cheaper to make solar panels and wind turbines, says analyst Marlene Matica at Deloitte.
The actual cost of the components are declining, but also the efficiency of the technology is increasing. So the wind turbines are now becoming larger and larger.
And as a result, solar and wind are now the cheapest ways to add power generation in most of the world, says a report from Bloomberg New Energy Finance. Another report from the investment bank Lazard says building and maintaining a solar or wind farm costs as much as keeping an existing gas plant running, all of which threatens the market for natural gas. Nikos Saffos at the Center for Strategic and International Studies says pressure's mounting for folks in the gas business.
This may be an industry that could be shrinking in 10, 15, 20 years. So how can I be sure that my project is the one that survives? So it puts you in that mindset rather than a mindset where everything is growing, there's space for everyone.
A typical natural gas power plant lasts 20 years or so. By then, wind and solar will be thriving. So some gas plants will have to shut down early, predicts Sue Tierney at the Analysis Group Consultancy.
You would expect to see disclosure statements by companies that there will be much lower utilization rates or a truncated life. That's being discussed in a lot of places.
Because of that, Tierney thinks a lot of money invested in the natural gas business won't be made back. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Everything you need to know to start your economic day will be delivered to you every morning on the Marketplace Morning Report. Check it out. Jasmine Garst did a story for us a couple, maybe 3 weeks ago, about Regal Cinemas closing down all its theaters in this country. Temporarily, it said, because of lockdowns and human behavior. That is one corporate response to change circumstances, but not the only one. Here's Jasmine.
Carrie Larson used to love going to the movies.
We'd go 2 to 3 times a month, easily.
She lives outside the Twin Cities in Minnesota and misses the escape and was pretty excited to find out her local AMC was offering to rent out theaters to private parties.
It was actually probably really ridiculous how excited I was when I walked in the theater.
Theater chains like AMC, Cinemark, and Alamo Drafthouse are renting out entire screens to a few dozen guests. Prices vary. Classics go for as little as $100. Watching Tenet with your pod can cost up to $350. It's a strategy national chains are turning to as most major movies are getting postponed. Sean Robbins is an analyst with Box Office Pro.
Without major new products to kind of help build that momentum, it's hard for a lot of theater owners to get back on their feet as quickly as hoped.
It also helps that you can control who's sitting next to you. The idea of going to the movies with a bunch of strangers might give you the jitters, but sitting next to people you know have been taking precautions, to Carrie Larson, that felt a lot safer.
Because I knew it was private and I knew it was just whoever was in our bubble.
She went with 7 people, friends and family, and for $99 ended up watching...
Halloween, Mrs.
The Nightmare Before Christmas. It coincided with her daughter's 10th birthday.
Those birthday parties always cost between $200 and $300. And so this actually felt like a bargain.
About a third of Alamo Drafthouse's revenue right now is coming from private rentals, according to Kristen Wheaton, the company's vice president of venue experience.
It's been a real glimmer of hope for us. We're booking hundreds of events each week.
AMC and Cinemark did not respond to interview requests. Professor Arun Sharma teaches marketing at the University of Miami. He says these rentals are a creative, temporary relief, but not a rescue.
The things that will take theater through has to be the opening of theaters, which is happening now, but more importantly, the release of really big blockbuster movies.
He says until the next batch of new superheroes and villains debut on the big screen, it'll be hard times for theaters. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I feel like I'm back in my old classical piano days. People are just sitting and judging me.
Well, that's no good. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials gained 139 points today, a 0.5%, 26,659. The NASDAQ up 180 points, that's 1.6%, 11,185. The S&P 500 up 39, 1.1%, 33.10 there. Scott Tong was telling us about the economics of wind, solar, and natural gas. So a look at Northland Power. That's a Canada-based company with assets in all three areas. Northland heated up 1.6%. TransAlta, that's another Canadian energy company, accelerated 0.25%. Jasmine put the spotlight on the big screen. AMC down 3.4%. In the at-home couch potato streaming category, Netflix up 3.6%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Continuing with the somewhat unintended theme of the program today, which is kind of dense economic topics, output gap, anybody? We are going to spend some time today and tomorrow on the dollar. Our dollar, yes, but also in a way, it's the world's dollar, too. It's the global reserve currency. Most other central banks hold dollars in their reserves. It is the world's most traded currency all by itself. And lots of other things are traded in it, too. Oil, for instance, is denominated in dollars. And during the pandemic, the dollar has been hitting some highs and some lows. So today, what that means for consumers and companies, and we're going to start small.
I like to order special gummy bears from Germany.
Look, we've all got our things, right? That's Tariq Hussan. He's an associate professor of economics at Boston University.
The pack I like basically now costs me 10% more than it did in April. So those gummy bears now cost me $24 rather than $21.
They're pricier because right now the dollar is weaker than it was back in the spring. So it doesn't stretch quite as far as it did back then. $1, in other words, can't buy as many euros as it did a couple of months ago. There's another way to think about that. And yes, $3 for the professor isn't that much money, but there is a lesson here for the global economy.
The same thing that's happening to my gummy bears is now happening to all goods that are imported to the U.S.
So a weaker dollar means U.S. consumers and importers are going to pay more for stuff they buy from overseas. But that's actually helpful if you're an American company selling your stuff overseas.
So U.S. exporters now are more competitive abroad because, for example, Europeans will now find U.S.-produced goods a bit cheaper than they used to be.
The same way a dollar can buy fewer euros right now, a euro can buy more dollars. Now, why a dollar's value changes? Well, that'll be tomorrow. Just a little bit less than 4 years ago, January of 2017, we did a bunch of work in Erie, Pennsylvania, some stories about how the city and its economy might change under what was about to be, back then, a new administration. The calendar coming around again as it is to that point in the election cycle. Some update calls seem to be in order. Kerry Quigley is one of the people we talked to back then. He is the president of Sterling Technologies in Erie County. Kerry, it's good to talk to you again.
Hey, nice to talk to you, Kai.
So it's been a couple of years. Like two and a half. How's business?
Yeah, you know, business is actually, considering this crazy, unprecedented time, business is actually great. We're super busy.
I mean, can people come to work, all of that stuff?
So we were an essential business. We're in the plastics business. So we actually never shut down. So we did have some people working remotely, and anybody that doesn't have to be here is not here. But our work environment, people actually kind of get to work pretty isolated. And yeah, we've been rocking the whole time.
Yeah. For those who've never been inside what's the name of the plastics technology you guys used?
It's rotational molding.
Rotational molding, right. It's really industrial and heavy, so it's not something you can do from home. Let me ask you real quick before we get to the topic at hand. How are you feeling about the future and this coronavirus, even though you're essential and, you know, the economy is looking meh?
Yeah, nervous day to day. We feel, you know, we've got a great backlog. I could hire another 30 people tomorrow if I could find them. This year has been great for the employees of this company. It's helped them get raises. It's helped people get, you know, work lots of time. But yeah, I'm very nervous about it, because if a lockdown comes in, that, you know, a lot of the things we do are seasonal, and we could lose that business for forever.
Let me back you up for a minute. If you needed to hire 30 people tomorrow, would that be tough for you to do?
It is actually very difficult. We're trying to do it. So we've been running virtual ads. We've rented electronic billboards. And, you know, this Saturday, even being the Saturday being Halloween, we've actually got a drive-through job fair.
Wow. Are you going like 24/7 shifts? What are you doing?
We're 24/5. Okay. And the problem is I've got the business to run 24/7, but I don't want to burn out the people. I mean, they're working hard enough as it is. And, they can't give any more.
Right. Fair enough. So we were out there the very first time around Inauguration Day in 2017. Calling you back, obviously, because there's an election on the very near-term horizon. How has the Trump administration been for you and your business?
So I can say for this business, and, you know, I can speak for myself as president. The business is owned by the Cronkite family. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that the past couple years have been great years for us. And this year, our fiscal year ends September 30th. We just had one of our best years in probably a decade. We've bought new equipment. We're making changes to the facility to upgrade the facility. Those are the next steps. And, you know, we kind of need to see what's going to happen. Needless to say, I'm nervous. You know, I mean, I would like to see the trend that we have from the past couple years continue through the next 4 years.
So that would be lower regulatory environment, business-friendly policies, and you're concerned that perhaps if there's a change in the White House come Tuesday, that would change for you?
Well, sure. If, you know, as those things change, it impacts our employee base. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this company, the ownership of this company has done a great job of making it a trickle-down effect. We're an open-book company, so we share any of our profits with the employees, all of them, and any of our losses with them. And again, the last couple years have been good, and it's reflected in the raises that they're getting. And sure, if we go back to where the business is not as profitable, the employee base shares in that.
Mm-hmm. Biggest unknown for you then is the politics in the United States of America, right?
That's right. Yeah, for sure.
Kerry Quigley, he's the president of Sterling Technologies. Got him in just outside, I suppose, Erie, Pennsylvania. Kerry, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Guy. Have a great day.
You too. Sunday is the first of the month. Rent is going to be due, which could mean bad news for millions of Americans. Nearly 18% of renters have missed a rent payment within the past 6 months. That's according to our most recent Marketplace Edison Research poll. State eviction bans, you might have heard of those. They have or will soon expire. And as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, even though the CDC's nationwide moratorium is still in place, those state bans do matter.
So far, the CDC moratorium is working as intended for a lot of people, says Diane Yentel of the National Low-Income Housing Coalition.
But it's flawed, and it has a lot of holes that some renters are falling through.
For one, it does not protect tenants who are month-to-month or whose leases are expiring. And in Colorado, at least,
we're seeing a lot of those cases under the CDC moratorium.
Zach Newman is the founder of the Colorado-based COVID-19 Eviction Defense Project, and he's happy that Governor Jared Polis decided to reinstate a ban on evictions last week.
The state moratorium here in Colorado basically closes those holes, so tenants have greater protections as we head into the fall and winter.
But most states have let their eviction bans expire, including Massachusetts, where Governor Charlie Baker announced about $100 million in rent relief. Chris Norris of the nonprofit Metro Housing Boston says that will help a lot of people over the next few months, but
it's nowhere near enough. It's a nice first step.
Norris is worried about what happens at the end of the year when the CDC moratorium expires, if the federal government doesn't step in. Diane Yentel is too.
At that point, renters will owe tens of billions of dollars in back rent that they can't possibly afford to pay,
which could mean 30 to 40 million people at risk of eviction in the middle of winter. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
More than 750,000 people made first-time claims for unemployment benefits last week, lost their jobs, in other words. That is down from a week earlier, but still huge as we're approaching month 9 of this coronavirus economy. Back at the start of this thing, we started talking to three people about how the pandemic was changing things for them.
My name is Maria Barillas. I am a server and a barista in Brooklyn, New York.
Hi, I'm Seth Schulman. I'm a musician from Chicago. I'm a teacher and I gig on the weekends.
My name is April Oliver and I live in Bozeman, Montana.
All three were looking at sudden unemployment back in March. Schools and restaurants were closing. Live shows were ending. A job offer was delayed indefinitely, but rent was still coming due.
It just feels a little hopeless.
Like a nightmare that's steadily approaching towards you. Like you can see it from a distance and you're just like,
I'm really nervous and worried.
So as October comes to a close and rent and everything is due once more, we got him back on the phone.
I got hired at a new restaurant in July.
Past few months have been a little bit of the same. Never really got through with unemployment, but been playing a few shows and mainly just teaching online.
I think it was about June that I started working full time. At this point, I've been working there 6 months and I'm starting to feel kind of integral to my job. So that's nice. It's nice to have that kind of stability.
Even though I don't really know, I think there's going to be another shutdown because, I mean, you know, cases are rising. I've actually kind of considered trying to figure out if I can break my lease, if the shutdown is in the winter and there's no sign from, you know, the government that there's going to be a relief bill.
Rent is still a bit of a struggle. I'm not going to lie, I'm still on food stamps and stuff, things that I don't really enjoy being on. But it could be a lot worse. There's a lot of people suffering out there. So anything I can get, I'm just thankful for, to be honest.
My main concern right now is I was unemployed for 4 months. And so my savings was almost completely drained. And I want to get to the point where, again, if I lose my job, I can be unemployed for 4 months and not be hurting.
Work has been pretty busy. We hired a few people, like a few extra servers. But I think that as it gets colder and rainier, it might like peter out.
I'm not worried day to day if, you know, our workload is going to change and then am I going to have to be laid off because we don't have enough work. That definitely has not been the case. If anything, we are overcommitting ourselves.
I think our August was supposed to have like 15 shows in it and ended up being like 3 or 4. The crowd size is severely diminished and everyone has to sit down and wear masks. We're an 80s tribute band. You know, we go hard, we go loud, fast, and usually the crowd response is also them going wild and crazy. So it's a little interesting. I feel like I'm back in my old classical piano days. People are just sitting and judging me.
Seth Schulman in Chicago, April Oliver in Bozeman, Montana, Maria Barillas in Brooklyn, New York. This final note on the way out today, petrochemical division. ExxonMobil announced it's going to lay off 1,900 people here, possibly as much as 15% of its global workforce, once company's done with its review of what the pandemic is doing to its business. Speaking of which, sluggish demand sent crude oil down another 3% today, but that is not why I bring up Exxon. At the close of trade today, just to give you a sense of how this economy is changing, ExxonMobil, one of the old line industrial companies in this economy, had basically the same market capitalization as Zoom. Think about that. Okay, we're going, but here is your moment of economic context on this Thursday, just to round out the day in unemployment news. In a workforce of, give or take, 160 million people right now, 22,654,453 of them are getting some kind of government unemployment assistance. Amir Bibawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Kat Green, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. And this is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.